Trickeration. Welcome to Trickeration, a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the Trickeration Podcast, the number one podcast about deception in sports, the only podcast about deception in sports. I'm your host, Matt, bringing you this weekly spoonful of sporting nonsense. Last week, we had an alligator in the Miami Dolphins shower, and the winningest coach in NFL history falling for the old poop on the football trick. This week, we've got a football fan's fantasy turning into a million-dollar nightmare, and later an MLB coach pulls a Sid Finchian hoax on the team's veterans that many still believe to this day. I hope Jonathan Lucroy and Matt Garza are listening. And a reminder, if you have ideas for future episodes, please email the tip line at trickerationnation@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. All right, on to the show. I got to say, 2020 was a pretty bad year, but this is not a great capper.
What can happen next? If they don't find the treasure on Oak Island, that's going to be the tipping point for me.
What is Oak Island?
Oh, it's a treasure hunting show. It's been going on for 7 seasons.
And did anyone in that show think they found the treasure and then it turned out that they didn't?
Yeah, every episode. And then it's just like a stick or a piece of wood in the ground.
And did you ever put it together that you were basically the guy who thought he found the treasure and then it ended up being a stick?
Yeah, but I actually found it and then someone stole my bag of treasure.
Rob Hunts is a 41-year-old insurance salesman living in St. Louis. And with no local football team to root for, he has found alternative ways to make the games more interesting.
I mean, it's tough to watch the Bears and Bengals or just a regular football game like that. You know, you need a little rooting interest. If it's not your home team, it is tough to watch most sporting events, I would say. But if you need 20 points from DJ Chark to win some money, then you can watch it.
Rob, like most red-blooded men of a certain age, started playing fantasy football with friends in the early 2000s.
We did that a few years, and then I guess DraftKings and FanDuel came on the scene and, you know, made it weekly. And then once you get into it, it's pretty fun, addicting. Every week, you got a new team. It's a clean slate. It's a chance at some real money.
For the first couple of years, as he figured out the strategy, Rob took some lumps.
When I say take lumps, I mean lose money. So I probably lost money for 2 to 3 years.
But the advent of daily fantasy attracted even more people into the competitions, changing the strategy for winning big payouts. Rob's site of choice for daily fantasy is DraftKings.
You should take a minute to learn the craft a little bit if you're going to try and be serious about it. There could be 100,000 people, 200,000. Some tournaments you could put 150 lineups in. Then it gets into like game theory and percentage of ownership. So let's say Saquon Barkley is in a great spot, for instance, a year ago. He might be owned by 35% of the field. Well, if you pivot off him and take Todd Gurley, you know, he's lesser owned. And then you jump up on the field if he has a big game versus the other guy. And then you got to look for value plays or low percentage ownership guys. So you got to be willing in those big tournaments to lose. But you might have a unique lineup where you can actually cash in on something. You can play Sundays, you can play the Thursday night game, the Monday night game. So this one that I did was a Monday night showdown. So there's only one game.
October 26th, Chicago Bears versus LA Rams. 176,470 fantasy football entries are competing for the top prize of $1 million.
I'm just trying to get a unique lineup where nobody else really has it. And there's only a finite number of players you can choose from. Everybody is going to take, you know, Allen Robinson or Robert Woods. So if you deviate from that or pivot, and I faded those guys, I didn't pick those guys because they had tough cornerback matchups. I gained a little bit on the field, and also kickers and defenses came into play because I didn't think it was going to be high scoring. What set me apart is I took 2 defenses. Also, I picked all Rams players in maybe like 19 of my 43 entries.
And where were you watching the game and who were you watching it with?
So actually just at my house, chilling. I got a new pup, Achilles. So we were just watching the game. And like I said, I faded two big receivers and I liked Reynolds and Everett. So they did well, Rams defense. So I was up there.
The first half ends and Rob is in contention for a payout of some kind.
And then I guess it all broke down to the second half. I had Bears defense. So when I got a fumble recovery return for touchdown, that catapulted me to the $1 million. So I saw my name with the million. I'm like, oh my God. I'm refreshing the whole time. I take a breath. I'm freaking out. I'm pacing. I took some blood pressure medicine. My dog's looking at me like I'm possessed. So anyway, I was at the million. I'm charging my phone for a minute. I walk back in. I look and I'm not. At this point, I think Allen Robinson caught a ball. So I went down tied for second for maybe 200 grand or something. So I'm like, oh my God, I know it's still going to come down to the end. And I'm like, come on, something needs to happen. Give me an interception. Give me this sack, whatever.
A sack is exactly what happened. With 3 minutes remaining in the fourth, Rams QB Jared Goff fakes a handoff right and bootlegs left. Two Bears maul him behind the line of scrimmage for a 3 yard loss.
At this point, I'm just looking at my phone and I go right back in front with less than 30 seconds left. So I'm just trying to kneel down. Let's get this game over with. Let's get out of here. Let's make me a millionaire.
After a short Nick Foles completion, the Bears' final possession sputters out on downs. Goff kneels twice as the clock runs out on a 24-10 Rams victory.
But I wanted to give it a minute. Just for that last catch to be recorded or that last yard. So I waited a minute and it went to zero possible minutes remaining. So, yeah.
And what was the emotion when you saw your name officially next to the $1 million with no time remaining?
I don't even know if I yelled out or anything. I mean, it was just kind of astonishment, shock. And I kind of just wanted to clear my head for a minute and let it sink in. So I did that before I got obnoxious and started, you know, sending a screenshot to the mass text we had for our regular football league.
Minutes after winning $1 million, Rob did what most people would do. He took his dog for a walk.
We're dealing with potty training issues. We're getting better on that. I mean, he's a young pup. So yeah, I went outside. I'm like, I guess I'll call my parents, talk to my dad. Told him I was going to give him some money. And he goes, call your mother. I call downstairs. She always questions anytime I win money. You know, is this real money? I'm like, Mom, it's real money. I got to pay the IRS, all that stuff. And then I'm refreshing my screen again, this time almost narcissistically to see my name by the million. You know, I keep doing it and boom, it changed. And then that's when my mood changed. It got dark. So I go, Mom, I gotta go. Then I go inside and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I'm like, well, I'm winning 100,000 or 50,000. So I'm like, at least where's my name? And I'm looking at it. So then I went to a tie for sixth with maybe 10 to 15 people or something. So from a million down to 3 grand, which was crazy. I did let out a guttural scream there. My dog, you know, thought I was probably a crazy person at this point.
Yeah, I've seen those videos of gamblers throwing their remotes at their TV or punching holes in the wall. Did anything get broken in your house?
No, surprisingly. I can do some damage. You know, I'm a little bit bigger guy. I've gained some LBs over the past couple years, and I could have broke something. I could have Cobra Kai'd a door. Did some damage here, but yeah, it was pretty good as far as that goes.
So what happened here? About 20 minutes after the game ended, Goff's late failed bootleg was changed from a sack to a negative 3 yard run after it was determined that the wide receivers were blocking for Goff downfield. That seemingly insignificant change cost Hunts $997,000.
I've been stat corrected before.
Previously, Hunts had lost out on $5,000 when a phantom field goal was immediately corrected in the final tally.
So that was rectified, you know, fairly quickly. This was not that. This was something, you know, it took a little bit of time. You know, I mean, it was 15, 20, 25 minutes. So I was pretty much winning the million in my mind for, you know, that duration.
What was it like trying to go to sleep that night?
I really didn't. I mean, I think it was 3 or 4 in the morning. My mind was racing. So it's like I was up, but I wasn't concentrating on anything. But yeah, it's just, it was unsettled, like restless type of deal. I mean, it's weird.
And how are you feeling about things a few weeks after the fact, now that the reality has sunk in?
I think I'm not too despondent. It's nice to know that I got there. So I know I can get there again is the philosophy I'm taking. It's also utter disappointment, a little bit of anger. So I don't know. In the back of my mind, I feel like I'm going to get there. I feel like I've progressed and, you know, doing the right things. And eventually it'll happen, I think.
All right. Time for a quick break. On the other side, a pitcher with a mysterious and murderous and possibly made up past makes the big league club. But what happens when his teammates find out the truth?
It's my first year with the Brewers, and I thought it would be cool to prank the older players. You know, most people play pranks on the younger guys. I said, I want to play one on the older guys. There's the Garzas, the Lucroys, Aaron Hill. So we had this relief pitcher, Junior Guerra is his name, kind of a blank look, didn't say much.
Back in 2016, Milwaukee Brewers coach Pat Murphy was enjoying his first spring training with the club. Also in his first spring training that year was a 30-year-old pitcher named Junior Guerra, with only 4 innings of MLB experience to his name.
If you look at this guy's baseball card, it's blank for like 6 years, because he was a catcher, turned into pitcher, was out of the game, and then played in Italy and Europe. And, you know, you don't get a baseball card if you're playing in Italy and Europe. Well, he just kind of caught fire, re-signed. So I told everybody he was in prison. I said, you know, he shot 4 guys, killed 2. And he was defending his family, but he was getting robbed in the Dominican. Now, the guy's not even from the Dominican. He's from Venezuela. And I told the guys, whatever you do, don't look him in the eye. I said, that's the wrong thing to do for anybody that spent time in prison. You just don't eyeball him. That means you want to fight him.
How do you first approach Junior with that story, and what do you tell him?
I say, hey, Junior, man, I got something to tell you. You got to go along with this. I go, I got all these guys believing that you shot 4, killed 2, defending your family, and you had to go 5 years to prison. And he just smiled, you know, like, you crazy guy, thinking it would go nowhere, you know, but this thing just took on a life of its own. Every time I'd see Junior, I'd show up 4 fingers, 2 fingers, and he'd do the same thing back to me. 4-2, you know, like 4-2. That means shot 4, killed 2. So it played into it, because other people would see that and we wouldn't say anything else to each other. Like in the dugout before games, you know, when everybody's giving each other pound or whatever handshake they have, we just go 4-2 to each other. And the guys, they're like, wow, that's incredible. Murph just brings it up like that. And Junior played along, but he didn't make too big a deal out of it. And he was just kind of quiet about it. He played it off great.
The legend of Junior Guerra grew and grew over the course of the season.
I didn't even know Junior was going to make our team. Not only does he make our team, he's pitching unbelievably as a starter. And it was like, where did this guy come from? So it made the story even better. He was very quiet and to himself his first year. And very pensive, you know, he didn't show a lot of emotion, or he didn't talk, you know, to other guys a lot. Great guy. Everybody loved him. But it played into the story, you know, like, whoa, he seems so calm for a killer. And, you know, Lucroy would go to the mound. He wouldn't look him in the eye because he was told not to look him in the eye.
Does no one in the MLB have access to the internet?
You know, because he was fairly an obscure guy, nobody really bothered to question me on it. You know, you believe what you hear, and nobody questioned it. And then it started leaking all over the league. We're playing the Padres, and the pitching coach comes up to me and goes, "Hey, the kid's starting today, man. He's been pretty special. This is the guy that shot four people, killed two." I'm like, "Yeah, man, he's a killer. He did his time, though. He did his time." Fast forward 3 years, we got Wade Miley on the team. And I'm telling the story to our video guys and our advanced scouts. I'm telling them the story of the trick we played. Wade Miley walks in. We had just acquired him. He goes, "Oh, no, I know the story. The kid killed two people, shot four. Yeah, I know all about it." And instead of saying, no, I'm just telling you it was a joke, we just let it go. Part of being a prankster is that you never lead on to anything like that. You know what I mean? You never lead on or ever admit or whatever. You just kind of keep going, you know? So it's been an ongoing thing. We don't know who knows. I don't even know if Lucroy or Garza or any of these guys know the truth. But it was unbelievable. You know, it just made the legend of Junior Garza.
And what role do tricks like this play on a big league club?
I believe in teams really connecting with each other through this type of things. It's like a secret amongst yourselves that you carry on or play jokes or whatever it might be. And I've been doing it for a while. It's a way to keep it light. I can assure you the intent of any type of spoof that I was part of was just to create a connection between players and some levity. Since sometimes they take their job too serious. It's just a game. But they got to look at it that way in order to perform their best sometimes.
All right, that is it for today. A thank you to Rob Hunts and Pat Murphy for sharing these stories. And a thank you also to all the listeners out there who have rated and reviewed the show and passed it along to their friends as we try and grow the Trickeration Nation. Next week, we've got a special Thanksgiving episode involving Peyton Manning and some turkey trickery that is not to be missed, so be sure to tune in for that. And as we do every week, we check in with the legend, Chris Mad Dog Russo. Chris, how'd we do this week?
Matty, good job. Keep up the good work, pal.
All right, thanks, Chris. Talk to you guys next week. Trickeration is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.